Show me what you got.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I can't remember the last time the Jets were, what's the word for it, competent.
With the fourth pick.
Overly competent at this.
With the 10th pick. With the 26th pick. The New York Jets select.
Jets had a great draft. Holy crap, they had a great draft. Oh my God, they had a great draft. It was incredible. Oh my God.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah. ESPN NFL analyst Robert Griffin III. Still to come, Commanders head coach Ron Rivera. Plus, renowned author Don Winslow. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show on the air, Tuesday after NFL draft weekend. Tuesday of two big game twos in the NBA playoffs tonight. The Celtics trying to even the score with the Bucks, and the Grizz trying to do that with the Warriors after dropping games one from both of their series at home. We already had a great chat with none other than Daniel Jeremiah, my colleague from the NFL Network, draft expert, if you will. And also Robert Griffin III, who ran a 4.48 40 for Run Rich Run this year in support of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And he said that that run, when it aired on Saturday on NFL Network's draft coverage, his phone blew up, not only from people saying, man, you're still fast, but NFL teams who are interested in him. And even though he's loving what he's doing with ESPN right now, he would absolutely entertain a return to the NFL at age 32. That's what he said in hour number two. And joining us here to kick off hour number three is somebody whose organization drafted RG3 many moons ago, and who also has donated his time and generosity, he and his wife, towards St. Jude Children's Research Hospital for Run Rich Run. He is the head coach of the Washington Commanders, Ron Rivera, here on the program. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Rich. How are things?
I'm doing great. Better for talking to you. How you feeling? How's life?
Feeling good. Thank you. Everybody's doing real well and pretty excited, you know, as we continue the rest of this offseason program.
Okay, so let's just jump right into it here. And I'll start with your team's decision in the first round of the draft. Trade out of 17 down to 16, and you wound up with Jahan Dotson of Penn State. What was the thinking about dropping down for that?
Well, a couple things was obviously to get a couple of extra picks. You know, to move from 11 to 16, we knew there was value, and we knew we could make a move that would help us. Secondly, you know, we had a good stack of players that were available. One of the guys in that group was Jahan, who we felt very, very good about. We felt so good about him that we didn't bring him in on a 30 visit just because we felt we knew enough about him that he was the kind of guy that we had hoped to get a chance at, and sure enough, we did.
So when you don't bring somebody in on a visit, why? Is that because you might signal an intention that you don't want signal, kind of keep it under the radar? Is that you specifically do that?
You know, he was a guy we didn't have really any questions on. You know, we had over six of our personnel there for his pro day. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a lot of background on him while they were there. We've done a lot of background on him throughout, and just felt that this was a guy we didn't have any questions on, so we didn't want to, you know, raise any flags as far as he was concerned. So we opted not to bring him in.
Well, we spoke to James Franklin about a week ago, and he said he's one of the most talented guys he's ever been around, and he started talking about guys that he was around when he was a receiver coach for Green Bay back in the mid-aughts, as well as, you know, Godwin and others who have come through his midst. He talked Dotson up through the roof, Coach.
Yeah, and you know, and that was one of the things that stood out was the number of people that were willing to talk to him and talk about him, and you know, with the glowing reviews that we got. So we just felt, like I said, we just didn't need to go out and dive any further or draw any more attention to a young man like that.
So that said, Coach, when you trade away the 11th overall selection to New Orleans, and they draft Chris Olave, did at any point in time you look down at your phone to see if Terry McLaurin was texting you saying, what's up with that? You know, you had a chance to get him a fellow Buckeye, and that didn't happen?
Coach? No, it didn't. But, you know, okay. Terry, you know, we did talk to Terry about Chris, and he was very, you know, he was very, very positive about him. We talked to him about Garrett as well, and he you know, spoke highly of both those young men, and they were guys that were on our radar, and they were guys that were part of our stack. So, you know, when you're in the position we were and you had guys that were still available – we felt it was a good shot or a good risk to take, and we were very comfortable with our decision.
No, and I don't mean that as a shot at Dotson.
Oh, no.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like
I agree. I was just making the point that we had a number of quality guys that you know, we didn't feel we would go wrong with any of them.
Ron Rivera for the Washington Commanders here on the Rich Eisen Show. So let's talk about Sam Howell. Top of day three, there you are, and you just jumped right on him. Were you surprised that he was there still?
Yes.
For you?
To be up front, yes, we did. We actually had a pretty high grade on him. He was one of the quarterbacks that we really liked, and if we had still been in the quarterback derby, he might have been a guy that we targeted. We felt really comfortable about drafting the guy there and telling him, hey, look, this is an opportunity to come in, no pressure, to play right away so you can develop and grow, and who knows, you know, down the line at some point you're going to get that opportunity. But right now we feel very good with Carson. We feel very good with Taylor as our two quarterbacks.
Well, the conversation about Howell going into the draft was a fascinating one because of where he was evaluated by the talent evaluation community going into his final season at North Carolina and potentially first quarterback off the board if this draft was held Labor Day. But here we are now in May, and he comes off the board in a fifth-round selection because of the way things went in his final year at North Carolina. What's your evaluation of Sam Howell based on what we were conversing about going in?
What was interesting was, last year we looked at both running backs and we looked at De'Ami Brown as potentials for us.
Right.
And so we really broke those guys down. Well, the one common thread, obviously, was Sam. And we really felt that, man, this dude was going to probably be one of the top prospects coming out based on 2020. And then when you take a step back and realize that, hey, three of his offensive linemen guys were gone, tight end was gone, two receivers, two backs. I mean, guys that were part of him having this great year were gone. So then going into 2021, basically a new offensive line, new skill positions, new backs. For the most part, this is a guy that, you know, still threw for over 3,000 yards, rushed for over 1,000, accounted for over 30 touchdowns, and fell like he did. It was a surprise, and we just felt we couldn't pass up the value there.
And it's kind of interesting because we just spoke, Coach, about Dotson being drafted in the 16th overall spot in a pick that you got from New Orleans, which is a pick that New Orleans got from Philadelphia, which Philadelphia got from Indianapolis in a Carson Wentz trade. And so isn't that interesting that that's how you wind up drafting a weapon for Wentz, is using a pick with that history to it. What's your sense of Carson Wentz right now, Coach Ron Rivera?
It's been all positive. You know, one thing that we were really pleased to see was the reaction of his teammates in Indianapolis when he was traded to us. I mean, when you talk about, you know, three of their star players just come out and, you know, T.Y. Hilton saying what he said and Taylor saying what he said and you know, their linebacker, I'm drawing a blank, I apologize, but, you know,
Darius Leonard.
All those guys come out saying, man, this guy was a good teammate. This guy was a guy that pulled us together. This was a guy that, you know, helped us, you know, get where we are or headed towards. You know, you feel positive about that. You really do. And it's an exciting thing to hear that his teammates spoke of him in that fashion. So that was really cool.
So I guess the sense, again, that's being discussed about Carson Wentz, I'd love to just put in front of you to, you know, converse on or refute, is, again, as you point out, when I asked you about your sense, you mentioned about his teammates elsewhere, is that not one but two organizations have sent Carson elsewhere after having him, and at a cost to them, you know, financially, right, in picks in Philadelphia and then in picks from Indianapolis. There's no concern from you on that front, bringing Carson in, Coach?
No, to be honest with you, there isn't, because, you know, the one thing I do look at, the fact that at one point he was 11-2 and unfortunately hurt his knee, a year where he was talked about in the MVP conversation. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that go into play, a lot of things happen. But to us, this was a positive. I mean, we were looking for a guy of his stature with his kind of abilities. So to be able to pick him up and, you know, make the deal for him, we feel very positive about that.
Okay. So how will the quarterback room go? And is there a competition at this position, or it's Wentz and then after that? There's no competition.
Yeah. No, it's Wentz and then it's Taylor. And, you know, and then obviously, as I said, there's no pressure on the young guy to develop or grow right away or immediately, although I know he will try and he'll work hard because that's who Sam Howell is. But again, we feel very positive, very comfortable in who Carson is for us going forward.
Coach, appreciate the time. And once again, you know, your largesse and your, you know, support of my run. I greatly appreciate it. And I send my best to you. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it, Rich. Take care now.
You got it. That's Ron Rivera, Washington Commanders head coach, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So, you know, all you heard is Terry McLaurin wants another weapon, and there was Olave sitting there on the board, and they flip out, and Olave gets chosen. And so I'm sure those five picks, he was just sitting there, what are we going to do? Dotson is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dotson is really good. But again, it's quarterback-driven league, folks. It's quarterback-driven league, and the one thing we heard at the Combine, and that's not the royal we, it's me and Daniel Jeremiah and everybody else on the NFL Network, and the sense that we got was Carson Wentz was out of Indianapolis come you-know-what or high water. That was it. When we asked Frank Reich about Carson Wentz on the final day of the NFL Scouting Combine, the Sunday before we all left to start the new league year just a week later, asked him about Carson Wentz, and his answer was, at the time when we acquired him, we thought it was the right thing to do. That's what he said about his quarterback. Joe Banner, right, former Eagles executive, said that's now not one but two teams that sent him packing and at a detriment to their bottom line.
Yeah. Third time's the charm.
Third time's the charm is that, like, this is it.
I don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah, this is it.
I don't know what it is. I mean,
they have a good team.
But he did.
Washington has good
weapons. If you
notice
his point, his first answer was what we liked when we traded for him was seeing his teammates saying, "Great job, Carson. See, you know, right. Good luck to you down the road."
Maybe they were happy to see him go.
I don't know what's going on with that.
I don't know.
You know,
it's weird.
I don't know what is going on with that.
Because he watched, you know, the games. He does a lot of, man, that was dumb. And then, like, whoa, what a throw.
Well, they didn't consider Baker Mayfield as first split second, by the way.
Yeah.
Because they went and they were on Wentz before, and Wentz created that opportunity that Baker was supposed to be all over there.
And Sam Howell, you know, like you talked about, he was maybe the top quarterback.
Daniel thinks that he can.
After last year.
Daniel thinks that he can show, like, if Wentz gets hurt and he's got to go in there. That he can do it.
I think we're going to see him play this year.
You don't think they hit him with the Heinicke first?
You know what you got in him, though, right?
You're not concerned, right, over there?
About the Washington football team?
It's the Commanders.
The Washington football team. You know, I'm concerned about this Eagles draft, and I'm trying to talk myself into it wasn't
that
good.
Dallas Cowboys' greatest concern.
There you go. Let's tweet that out.
Oh, really? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Dallas Cowboys' greatest concern.
Which team?
Yeah.
I'd have to say the team.
Choices are Eagles, Commanders, Giants, themselves.
I was going to say that too. I was going to say themselves.
Biggest concern? I would say the team in Philadelphia.
That's your poll question.
Right now. Eagles,
Cowboys' greatest concern.
Giants.
In the NFC East. Commanders, Eagles, themselves.
Definitely.
I think themselves wins by a wide margin. A wide margin.
How so?
The coach who called into the show and he's like, "Yeah, that was kind of awkward with Dan Quinn. We had to have a conversation to say we're cool with this, right?" Because, and I got it. And then he speaks to Jerry Jones to say, "What are you talking about at the Senior Bowl?"
Look, he was
saying stuff,
he was scouting and things,
saying stuff like. You know, great coordinators stay here because they think they can be in line to be the next coach of the Dallas Cowboys. That sort of stuff. The way that the season ended, that sort of stuff.
So, I mean, what's your
point? The way that Randy Gregory says, "I'm coming back, but not." The way that Amari Cooper gets sent out and Cedric Wilson gets sent out. And you're wondering, who's this kid from Tulsa? Like, all of that. Like, how are we going to get better? And here comes a kid from Tulsa.
Yeah, he could be great. I don't know. But that wasn't the question.
Themselves.
Micah Parsons suddenly not knowing how to drop a puck.
Oh.
Well, that has nothing to do with his
red
vocation.
Red flag. Red flag.
I don't know.
No, I mean, the Philly, man, they on paper, they got significantly better.
Yeah, better.
But we're
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
But, you know, we got to see, always. You know, I, like you always say, you don't win anything in April.
That's true.
Super Bowl's not won the day Absolutely after the correct. Draft or the week after the draft. And we still won, 13 games last year.
If Carson Wentz can actually play like the Carson Wentz who got hurt diving into the end zone in the L.A. Coliseum the year that they won it all, mm-hmm. if that Carson Wentz shows up and the Carson Wentz that played between weeks 3 and 15 of
this NFL
season.
You're oddly specific on all this,
well,
man.
Because those are I'm giving you the best of the Carson Wentz years.
Well, like I said, if you got to break it down to like specific weeks and years, then you're not going to get what you're looking
for. That's
the
problem with you when you're trying to acquire Carson Wentz and say, this is our championship quarterback. We're going to win a championship here. We're going to bring it home to Washington, D.C., where this franchise is all over the map. We're going to bring him in. He's going to be the calming influence on the field weeks 1 through 17, and then we're going to go on a deep run with Carson Wentz. This is going to be his spot finally after the revolving door that kept on kicking him out to different places. He's our guy. And so if that guy can show up, mm-hmm. and then the running game, right, shows up, and McLaurin and Curtis Samuel and Dotson, they still have Logan Thomas, right, the tight end, whenever he's healthy, and he started becoming a beast.
He was beasting last
right?
year.
Right?
A lot of ifs in that is all I'm
saying. And defensively, they start tightening up, and Chase Young doesn't get hurt. And that defensive line's no joke. I'm giving you the best of the Washington Commanders. Eagles definitely still scare you.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Evan Neal comes and helps protect Daniel Jones, who starts blossoming because of the weapons they have around him, and Dable knows how to position him.
What weapons did the Giants have on offense again?
Kadarius Toney, Kenny Golladay, whenever he's friggin' healthy. Saquon Barkley, whenever he's friggin' healthy.
Yeah, again, I'm more worried about the Philadelphia team.
Does Kayvon Thibodeau play offense?
I don't know. Let's see.
Let's hope not.
He definitely won't.
It's going to come down to the Eagles and the Cowboys.
At Rich Eisen Show, poll question. Cowboys' biggest threat in the NFC East.
Greatest concern.
Greatest concern in the NFC East.
Their fans should have that one.
No.
Oh, here we go.
Mike, only 4 spots.
No, those are the ones. They're passively crying, Mike. They're no threat to you.
That's true.
I'm not even passively crying. I'm trying to give,
No, I'm just talking about all those, that montage of fans that Stephen A. Smith threw in Michael Irvin's face.
Oh, my God. Like I said, Stephen A. is the number one Cowboys fan out there.
You say montage, I say montage.
All right. He loves the Cowboys.
Well done. A man who knows his words as well, the author Don Winslow, his new book, City on Fire. He's here in studio in person. That's next on the Rich Eisen Show with your phone calls and a news update to wrap the show up after him. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Thrilled to have here on the Rich Eisen Show in person is one of the great authors and best-selling authors around, and his new book, City on Fire, is available wherever you get your books. This is the first novel in an epic new crime saga, which this man knows all about writing, and he is Don Winslow here on the Rich Eisen Show. What a pleasure to see you, sir.
What a pleasure to be here. Thanks
for
having me.
You're in the middle of a worldwide tour right now. Are
you
not?
It's crazy right now. I am. I think in the States it's 23 cities in 22 days, and then a little gasping spell, and then Europe. Yeah.
Well, you're here in Los Angeles, where we are.
Yep.
You just had an event with Michael Mann.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's get into this. I knew you'd sit up straight for that one.
Whoa.
That guy is a huge Heat fan over there. As many.
We
others.
Talked a lot about Heat.
Okay.
Yesterday.
So let's. How do you know Michael Mann? How do you?
Through my agent and buddy Shane Salerno.
Okay.
Done a lot of things with Michael Mann, and then back in the day, Michael was interested in a book of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, called The Power of the Dog, not related to the current film.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I've known Michael a bit on and off. You know, we've had great conversations about the mob in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was so much fun being with him yesterday.
I bet.
You know, I got him to talk about Heat a lot. I got him to tell the origin of his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great time. He's a terrific guy.
Now, did you, I know this is not your project, but I mean, you mentioned like Heat 2. Are we getting another Heat here? Is that what
you're getting? A book. You're getting a novel, Heat 2, that takes place before and after the action in Heat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it describes a lot of the early years of those guys, mm-hmm. and then some of what happens afterwards. And Michael co-wrote it with Meg Gardner, who's, you know, terrific.
But you have nothing to do with it.
I have nothing to do with it. Just a friend of the court.
And a fan of
Heat and of Michael's and of Meg, you know, so it's a beautiful combination.
Well, I follow you on Twitter, so I see. Yeah. I see how you're selling your book or promoting it, and mm-hmm. who you're seeing. I saw a photograph of you with Jeff Daniels. So
yeah.
You've known him.
Known him for a while. Jeff helped us with some of the political videos that we did.
Right.
Narrated them.
Right.
So.
Liam Neeson, did you shout him out on your Twitter account?
I did.
As
Liam
well?
Is interested in doing a piece of mine. Bizarre, man, to turn on, you know, your little Zoom thing on your laptop computer, right? Mm-hmm. And there's Liam freaking Neeson like that, you know, say, hey, Don, you know, how are you? I said, hello, Mr. Neeson, you know, he's
right.
Like, oh, no, it's Liam, you know, God, we ended up talking about a movie called Belfast quite a bit.
Sure. That's recently nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah. It's trippy.
What is it like to have a work of yours made into a film, Don? I mean, how does that go about?
It varies, Rich.
Yeah.
You know, it
I know you've got history on things get made, don't get made, things like that. So.
Most of them don't get made. I mean, the reality is, and mm-hmm. you know the reality,
mm-hmm.
you know, that so many strings have to come together
mm-hmm.
to get that made that they usually don't. But yeah, one of mine was made by Oliver Stone, mm-hmm. a book called Savages.
Mm-hmm.
Shane and I wrote the screenplay, and there was another one called The Death and Life of Bobby Z. Although Hollywood called it Bobby Z because Death and Life of was apparently too complicated.
Right.
You know, that was made with, sadly, the late Paul Walker, who's mm-hmm. another really good guy, and Olivia Wilde.
What was it dealing with Stone? I know that might be, and you started laughing, but what was that like with Oliver Stone?
Making a movie with Oliver Stone is everything you think it is and a little more. Besides, and right. I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah. And then so your material, is it out of your hands the minute that it's put into somebody else? Or what, how does that work?
Well, look, I mean, it varies. What I really want is a seat at the table,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to me like a human being. I'm smart enough to know, and I've been around long enough to know, that books and movies have different needs. They're two different breeds of cat.
Right.
You know, so there are going to have to be changes made. But I want the changes justified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look, sometimes these guys come up with better ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people are doing a television series of these three big drug books I wrote.
Right.
And I read the scripts every draft and talk with the writers a lot. And at times he came up with ideas I wish I'd come up with for the books.
No kidding.
And I was a little jealous. I was a little irritated.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
sure.
I should have thought of that. You know, and other times they do maybe goofy things. You know, they go off on tangents and you have to reel them in a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and say, hey, you know, I know you were enthused about that idea at the time, but right. I really thought it through.
Life of a writer. No question about it. Don Winslow here on the Rich Eisen Show. Do you, when you are writing a book like City on Fire, do you think, as you're writing it, a character, that this could be made into a film? Do you think that as you are writing?
No.
At all?
At all.
Not at all.
Listen, I don't want to be disingenuous. Everything I've ever written mm-hmm. has been optioned for film or TV.
Right.
So I know that that's a probability.
Right.
But I have to forget about it. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise, two bad things would happen. Mm-hmm. Right. There's only two options. I'd write a bad film treatment mm-hmm. or I'd write a bad novel. You know?
Sure.
And so I forget completely about the movies. I never think about actors. I never think about any of that. Just write my book.
And I know that you are, have announced a retirement, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that here. But what is your process? I mean, how do you do this? I'm sure so many people are trying to pick your brain so they could have similar success that what you've had in your career, Don. But how do you go about
it? Rich, I'm afraid the answer is really boring, and it disappoints people. And it's going to disappoint you. I'm just letting...
Wow, what a windup. Right? Now here comes the pitch.
Here's the undersell.
Sure.
I work. I show up at my desk at 5:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and I leave it around 5:30 in the evening.
At home, or do you have an office that you go to?
Both. I have a little office. We rented an old gas station. I live in a very tiny town near San Diego, mm-hmm. up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. We rented an old gas station. My wife has half of it for her stuff. I have half of it for mine. It's literally a minute walk from the house, mm-hmm. you know, on a dirt road. So I work there. That's kind of it. I wish I had a more exciting answer. I've tried to think of one because mm-hmm. I cheerfully lie about it, you know, but it's not. There's no substitute for time.
What does a writer's block look like for you? What does that sort of thing look like? Do you have it?
Never had it.
Damn, Don.
Never had it because,
come on.
You know what? You know what I think a writer's block is, really? I think it's trying to write perfectly on a first draft. And so you lock up, you get scared, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not going perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. And so then people freak out and they seize up. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, I've written a couple of books now, right?
Yes, you have.
And so I kind of know, you know what I mean? If Tuesday morning doesn't go so great,
right.
Wednesday morning's probably going to be okay. You know, not to get nervous, not to get scared. And not to watch yourself writing. You can't sit on your own shoulder like Jiminy Cricket, mm-hmm. you know, or a parrot and kind of comment on what you're doing. You got to stay inside of it, and sooner or later it'll break up.
Don Winslow here on the Rich Eisen Show. City on Fire is about the criminal empires, two of them together in all of New England, right? Based in Rhode Island, which is where you're from. How do you know so much about this sort of subject matter, Don? How do you
grew up with it, Rich? You know, mm-hmm. I was a kid during the era of the mob wars in New England. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in the mob. My family wasn't in the mob, but those guys were always around. They were always around. Mm-hmm. You saw them. You went to parties with them. You know, when I was a kid, that was the guy at the end of the block keeping an eye on things. You know, every store you went into had vending machines because that was the mob's business. Mm-hmm. You know, I swear to God, doctor's offices had vending machines, you know, anybody. And so these characters were so familiar to me, mm-hmm. you know, it really was kind of a homecoming writing this book.
And then again, that's where all books are available right now. I've got Don Winslow here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's your favorite sports story, book, movie? What do you think? What do you got for me on that front that you love of? It could be either any book that you've read or a movie that was made out of a book.
I love Bull Durham.
Okay.
Love Bull Durham because it's a sports story without a climactic game.
That's true. That's an interesting,
you know,
way to look at it.
It just sort of fades out.
Right.
In a really realistic and, I think, beautiful way. You know, and it's funny and it's sharp and I love baseball, you know. Miracle.
The thing that's amazing about Miracle, you're already shaking your head because you love it too, Chris. The thing that we love about Miracle is I'm on the edge of my seat, and I know we beat the Russians.
It's like Apollo 13.
That's another perfect way to look at it, Don.
You know Absolutely. They make it, and you're still, like, so tense.
Yes.
And the night that you know, we beat the Russians in that game is still one of the best nights of my life.
Where were you?
I was in New York City managing movie theaters, and I would leave the theater and go around to a little deli stand where they had a TV set about this big in black and white and just, you know, stand there and watch it. I will confess this now for the first time ever.
Okay, Don Winslow.
Okay, committed a crime. When they won the game, to celebrate, I let people into the movie free.
Which movie was it? Do you remember which movie it was?
I'm not saying, in case they sue me now for the lost funds. I want to say it was The Great Train Robbery with Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, The Great Train
Robbery. And you know what? During the we were running The Great Train Robbery. You didn't ask me this, but I've had a lot of caffeine. I went out to check the line as one did, right? Because the owner would make people stand out on line to pretend it was a successful movie, whatever the movie was.
Yes.
Winter's day, snowing, cold New York, damp. I walk out on the line. Sean Connery is standing on the line with his wife.
Come on.
True.
To see The Great Train Robbery.
His own film, to buy a ticket. I mean, that's a gentleman.
To spike up the gross? The
no,
box office,
I think he wanted to see the film. He wanted his wife to see the film on the big screen. But he was not going to come in and say, I'm Sean Connery, as if that's not obvious. You know, let me in. He was standing in line with everybody else to buy a ticket.
Plus, he could probably care less about the semifinal for the Miracle on Ice.
Well, it wasn't the same day. It was the same film, but not the same day.
I see what you're saying.
You know, so I said,
I thought it was literally the day that you went that you were letting
people
in. You let Sean Connery in for free, too.
No.
Which, by the way, I would have done any day of the week as well.
Well, I did. I got him off the line.
Well done.
Yeah, of course.
You're smart to do that. Yeah. I remember that day, too, because we were trying to avoid finding out what the final score was by not turning on the radio.
Right.
Because the game was played in the afternoon and then not aired on ABC till later that night.
I remember.
And like, we would never be able to pull that off today.
No.
At all.
I couldn't. Yeah.
It would literally be like, did you see it? You'd see the video of 15 different plays.
Exactly. 28 people texting you about it.
And then, of course, everybody's saying Al Michaels made up that miracle line, you know, and talking about it, and immediately saying how much he's, you know, making this stuff up. And that's the day and age we live in. But I mean, that Miracle is a great movie. My favorite sports movie of all time is Hoosiers.
Great film.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
And we had David Onsma on the
show. Oh, you did?
We did. Yeah. And you know, I'm a Michigan guy, so I dislike Rudy as well, which is why they're laughing. They know where I'm going with this already. I can't stand Rudy because I'm a Michigan guy. Anything that makes anything Notre Dame like hagiographic, I find distasteful.
Exactly.
So David Onsma, I've told him about that, how much I dislike Rudy. He came on this show and told me that Rudy was like a Ken Burns documentary compared to Hoosiers, totally made up, with the exception of the idea that this school from Indiana won a championship, and that they sent, and this you're a perfect person to say this to, they sent Angelo Pizzo he sent him to the town, because he was the writer, sent him to the town to go see what story could be made out of this idea that a small Indiana high school could win state.
Right.
And he said he got a call back from Angelo saying, we got nothing. This place is boring. The story is boring. There's nothing. And they made everything up, from the Gene Hackman character to the Dennis Hopper character to, you know, Dentine, you know, smelling the gum.
Yeah.
Made it up out of a whole
club. Made it up. Would a screenwriter really make something up? I'm incredulous.
Yeah,
Rich.
No, I know. You're shocked to hear this gambling going on in Casablanca. You know?
Yeah.
But it's just, but I guess that's the whole idea of just trying to make a story out of something that's real, based on something.
Right. Yeah. You know? You've destroyed all my illusions. But how can you not like anything with Gene Hackman?
He's one of the greats of all time, right? Did you ever come across his path in any shape or form?
No. But French Connection changed my life. I was a young teenager and went into a movie theater in New York. And saw French Connection, and I thought, man, if I could tell stories like that someday, right, that would be the perfect life.
Well, and you're doing exactly that, sir. Don Winslow, get City on fire. What do you say to all your fans who are upset that you're retiring? What do you say to that?
That Don? It's time, you know. I mean, listen, this is a great project to go out on. The reviews, immodestly, have blown me away. You know, I've been so thrilled with the reaction. There'll be a second book and a third book. You know, the second book will come out exactly a year from now, the third book a year from that. Okay. So to my fans, I say, there are two more books coming. But I think, without getting heavy about it, there's another fight to fight right now. And I want my time and energies to go more into that fight.
And that's so, the political arena that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think, our democracy is at a, you know, existential point. But to get back to this, you know, this is, I wrote the first sentence of this book 27 years ago.
Get out of here.
Yeah, this has been the work of my life. I've come back to it when I've had a chance, you know. And so it's a very personal book to me. It's an important book to me. I'm thrilled with the reaction, you know. So this is a good book to go out on, these three books.
Well, congratulations on that. At Don Winslow on Twitter, I follow him. You should as well. At Don Winslow Films on Instagram. And you will be seeing a lot of his work over the next several months and years on the political front. And then, of course, City on Fire, a novel that is already on fire in its own right. Get it where all books are acquired. Don, thanks for being here. Appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
You bet. Right here, Don Winslow on The Rich Eisen Show. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items, from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back, and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store, and use my code EISEN.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories, and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, number to dial here on The Rich Eisen Show. Back here, everybody. Hey, everybody. Shad Khan has spoken to USA Today about Urban Meyer.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. No way.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I got to see this or hear it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you remember when...
go so many different directions.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember when this was recently where Urban showed up in a very unfriendly podcast. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. It's the exact opposite of that. It was somebody who covered him for years in Columbus to refute the notion that he had no idea who Aaron Donald was. And that was the athletic story.
He didn't actually answer the question.
He said he wouldn't dignify it. It's so silly. Of course I know who that guy.
What's his name again?
Aaron Dickert. Aaron Rodgers.
Albert Dickerson.
He basically was like, give me a famous Aaron. Go for it. I know who he is. Hank Aaron. I know who he is.
Aaron Boone.
Know who he is.
Aaron Boone.
Aaron Boone. Good job.
I know who Aaron Boone is.
Aaron Eckhart.
I know who he is. I've seen all of his, I have all of his albums.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? So, in the same podcast, Urban Meyer said the reason why he was fired, I believe we got fired. He says we. I don't know. Is that the royal we I think he's referring to his entire staff that he apparently demanded to defend their resumes. All of those folks got fired.
Get a
fight them?
Because we didn't win enough games. We had good enough players to win games. We didn't do a good job. I've always been a person, you are what your record is. That's always been his mantra.
Yeah.
We were 2-11. That's terrible. Now, they lost 15 straight games before that, so it was a build. And I believe we would have turned it. I thought we turned it when we beat the Buffalo Bills. Remember that time they beat the Bills?
I do. That was a weird game.
Unfortunately for the Bills, that's what helped put them in Kansas City as opposed to the other way around. But anyway, Shad Khan refutes the notion it was about wins and losses.
Thank goodness.
Telling Jarrett Bell, the great Jarrett Bell of USA Today, had nothing to do with that. Had to do with, get this, truthfulness. When you lose the respect, the trust, and an issue of truthfulness, how can you work with someone like that? It's not possible. Now, he went on to say the following. It was not about wins and losses. I think when you know someone is not truthful, how can you be around someone, okay? We had Doug Marrone here for 4 years. Marrone, by the way, went 25-44. We had Gus Bradley here for 4 years. He went 14-48. Good Lord. Jeez. I have nothing but the utmost respect and friendship with them. That's why they got the time, because it wasn't a matter about respect or truth. It was a matter of wins and losses over 4 years. This is much bigger than that. Now, here's what I love to have. That was the only quote that was in this piece that says, according to Jarrett Bell, the contract's not resolved. They're not paying Urban, and I guess Urban wants some scratch that I guess he'll get from Fox anyway when they put him on that set to talk about college football and being a winner. That'll be great television.
That's on you, Mike.
No, don't let it. Mike, you stay out of it. I can say these things. I can say these things.
I just mixed the games.
Meyer, apparently, they have not been able to strike a settlement agreement yet. I don't know what there's to settle. The person did not want to be identified because they are not authorized to speak on the matter. The Jaguars are contending the coach was fired for cause. A 5-year contract that he signed in 2021, per multiple reports, worth between $10 and $12 million a year. Oh, my God. And for that amount of money, we have a situation where we can't even guess where the breach of trust and respect came from, because there's too many choices. We can't even identify it. Normally, when a coach has lost the trust of ownership, you can kind of pinpoint with one finger. Oh, it was that moment.
That happened.
You know what moment it is for me.
The plane. The flying home.
Like tattoo. The plane. The plane.
That was crazy.
The plane. The plane.
The plane.
The plane. Boss. He's not on the plane.
He's not on the plane.
Everyone's on the plane, but not the boss.
Smiles, everyone.
Yeah, well, that's what they tried. Smiles. Hey, after that whole incident, they came back. Smiles, everyone. Smiles. Welcome to Fantasy Island, where a coach cannot go home with the team and stay behind and get caught with somebody not, well, we don't need to finish it, because it had nothing to do with what we saw. Okay, look, I've been through these grounds before. But it's amazing.
Great.
It's amazing. Shad Khan feels the need to publicly refute the notion of a coach saying, oh, I got fired because I couldn't win football games. And he's just like, no, you got fired because I thought you were a liar.
Yeah, an a-hole.
That's why. And I'm not going to pay you a dime. That's the cause. The cause isn't just cause. It's because you were a liar. And we can't pinpoint exactly what he was lying about. Was it benching James Robinson? Was it kicking his kicker? Was what he told his quarterback about receivers like John Brown being too slow to pick up on an offense? Could it have been about the plane? Hey, I cleared it with somebody. Or, hey, I was going to do this. I was going to do that. Or, hey, I don't know who that person was in the bar. Can't pinpoint it. So there's that. That's the latest. And the next latest is going to be when the announcement comes that he's showing back up on television to talk about winning and culture and building winning cultures and kicking kickers. No, I'm sorry. I'll leave that last part out. So there's the latest on that. Another story that's breaking right now is Ryan Tannehill saying that the loss of the end of the season put him in such a dark place that he had gone to therapy before, but felt this was the first time he really needed therapy to get out of the dark place that he was in, which is horrible to hear. Wasn't informed of drafting ahead of time about the drafting of Malik Willis, but he did text him to welcome him. And in the same breath, he feels that it is not his job to mentor him. Okay, that's the latest. That's the latest guy saying, welcome to the team. We're competing. He said if he picks things up from him, that'll be the way to go about it. And you know what? I remember a couple of years ago, Ben said that about Mason Rudolph.
That's
right?
What I just said. Ben.
I'm not here to mentor. Yeah. That was Ben.
And I, you know, at the time I was critical of him, and I don't know why I feel differently about Tannehill, but it's just like, you know, you're 33. Okay.
He's not at the end of his career.
They trade. No, I know that they trade away your top wide receiver. Okay. Julio Jones doesn't work out. You trade away your top wide receiver and they draft your replacement. And you just came out of, you know, needing to talk about the end of the season loss with a professional. I don't blame him for having this approach where I bet you after hearing all the conversations about that season ender against Cincinnati and him needing to talk about this stuff, needing to build some walls, man, and focus on 17 to make 17 better and thus the team gets better. And the last thing he's going to do as he's trying to win football games, you know, Tennessee Titans opener is to make sure Malik Willis is up to speed. Hey, I'm trying to get ready for the game. I'm trying to do this. I'm doing that. I'm meeting with the coach. I'm meeting with this. I'm meeting with that. Take 15, 20 minutes to sit down and go, are you situated, Malik? I kind of don't blame him for that. Now, if Malik Willis comes up to him and asks some questions and he's just like, you know, pound sand. Now, that would be a difference. But they're all in the same quarterback room. And if he's going to pick up on things and ask questions, he'll get answers. But other than that, like, is he there to bring him along?
Right. He's getting paid $29 million to win games.
So, I know he's going to get some heat for that sort of conversation. I'm not here to mentor him. Make sure that's the... Yeah, I mean, he also said it's a deep scar, the loss. A lot of sleepless nights. Every time I closed my eyes was seeing it. I was in a dark place. Now, he said, it's fuel for me. Good luck to you on that, sir. And that it was a shock to lose A.J. Brown. I thought they were going to get it done just in my heart. I thought we were going to have A.J. here for a long time. Didn't work out. That is correct.
Oof. Yeah, that's a
bummer. Hey, man, I do remember on the Super Bowl set, Travis Kelce saying, Alex Smith is gone. He's my guy. Treylon Burks could be the new guy. See how that goes. Oh, man, the NFL. Just fill the drama.
Never stops.
Filled with drama.
Never stops.
Tomorrow's show, Dennis Allen of the Saints. And also the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin, on this program. He doesn't do this stuff very often, but never say never. Thankfully, not the but never. No, don't worry, Mike. Yeah, you don't have enough time. Don't have enough time. It's okay. Chris Ballard of the Colts front office as well. That'll be on Wednesday's edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We're wrapping up on Peacock in a minute.